Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, there's no comments today, and that is probably a really good thing, as always. But if you're tuning in to JBL for the first time today, we have been reading and discussing Charles Krauthammer's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Things That Matter. It is a collection of his most popular essays published before his death in June 2018. Now, for today's program, I want to discuss Charles Krauthammer's superb essay titled Annals of Art. And for all of those out there that do have their books, that's page 83 of Things That Matter. I think this is an appropriate time to do this essay because of all the attention recently given to the Oscars. Now, I didn't watch the whole Oscar program. I'll guarantee you that right now. Now, usually the Oscars, it's supposed to be, celebrating the art on film. And I actually think that's very debatable anyway. So to help me do this, with me in the studio today is trumpet writer and host of KPCG-FM's The Sun Also Rises podcast, Mr. Jeremiah Jocks. Welcome, Jeremiah.
Thanks so much for having me.
I am so glad to have you on the program. We've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, we have. It's been in the works for a while, so it's great to finally be here with you.
Yeah, so for all of those out there listening, generally when I invite a special guest in, I allow them to pick the essay. I don't pick the essays for them. And Jeremiah probably doesn't know this, but I have a fine arts minor. So I was really glad that he picked this essay. And as I was reading the essay, Jeremiah, it brought back a lot of college memories for me.
You know, I didn't realize that you had a minor in the arts. That makes us a perfect fit for you, then.
Oh, it really was. My wife really helped me go through a lot of this, and she was really also excited. She's kind of a little jealous she can't be here today. But, when I was in college in the 70s, and we're going to get into this in the broadcast, we still studied classic art. And, now things were getting a little edgy at that time. And I was even at one point going to actually be an art student worth drawing and all that. I do have a little bit of talent for that. Mm. But I actually got out of drawing because it got weird and banal.
Right. Yeah.
So from my way of thinking, I think Krauthammer's essay just hits the nail on the head with this whole issue of art. So what do you think?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I don't have a minor in the fine arts, but I do have a deep affinity for art. I think its value would really be hard to overstate. And I'm thankful that we live in a society that can afford to make room for artists, because it's not something that anyone needs to survive. It reminds me of the letter that John Adams wrote to his wife when he said, "I must study politics and war so that our sons may have liberty to study mathematics. They should study mathematics, commerce, and agriculture in order to give their children a right to study painting, poetry, music, architecture, statuary, tapestry, and porcelain." And, I think it's just a fascinating sentiment that he expresses there, because he's showing that a society has to have really achieved a high degree of stability and laid a strong foundation before you can afford to have people whose job is just to create art. It's right. A luxury. So I do really appreciate art, but like you and like Krauthammer, I generally prefer the beautiful and the uplifting. I do appreciate an element of mystery, an acknowledgement of all the fascinating unknowns that art often touches on. But I struggle to see any kind of value in the type of exhibit that Krauthammer is discussing in this essay. Yeah. And I think he's exactly right to kind of decry it.
Yeah. Let me just maybe for all those listeners out there that maybe haven't read it yet, I'll just read this first paragraph, then that'll be our kickoff point. But it says, And again, I just think, and everyone's out there heard me say this already, that I just think Krauthammer has just a brilliant way of opening any essay. He just grabs your attention immediately. But he starts it out with four words, Culture Wars, Chapter 36. And as we were getting ready for this, I was wondering in my mind, does that mean something else? Culture Wars, Chapter 36? Like, what happened to Chapter 35? And 34. What's going on here?
Yeah, you know, I had the same feeling. I guess he's just saying it goes on and on. Here's right. Sort of a random number. Right.
He says, the Brooklyn Museum of Art readies an exhibition of high decadence called Sensation. That word set me off immediately. He says, the mayor of New York threatens to close down the museum if the exhibit is not canceled. The mayor is pilloried by the usual suspects, which I think was in a movie not too long ago, a consortium of New York museums, the ACLU, the Highbrow Press for Philistinism and or First Amendment abuse. I thought, I love that. I love that opening because I knew exactly where he was going.
Yeah, it's a powerful, you know, he brings you right in, and he does show right off the bat there that this is not a unique story, really, that he's covering. This is the direction that art and its relationship with tax funding, in a way, has been going for quite a while.
Yeah, I think it's really funny when the very next line he says, now the exhibit itself is nothing very special. So he obviously went to see it, and I know that I do love to go to museums. I mean, that's we have some real good access, like the Philbrook Museum in Tulsa. I mean, I love to go there, and I have my favorites in art, and it's spread. It's not just classic. I mean, I even know to like some of Picasso's stuff, and I'll tell you why later as we get through this. But he says, just the usual fin de. I don't know if I can say. You probably could say that better than I could.
In French, they would say fin de siècle.
Yeah, and that's he's really talking about the end of the century or the beginning of the new century there. And you may not catch that, readers, if you don't know a little bit of French. But actually, Jeremiah and I have known each other for a long time, and I knew him when he was a student studying in France. So we go back a long way. I think we just need to say one other thing here so that in case someone isn't reading it, they can catch on. It says, the item that caught Rudy Giuliani's attention is a portrait of the Virgin Mary adorned with elephant dung and floating bits of female pornography. The one that caught my attention is the giant portrait of a child molester and murderer made to look as if composed of tiny children's handprints. That sounds so much like 80s, 90s, where art was going at that point.
Yeah, it's shocking for the sake of being shocking. It's hard to discern any purpose for it other than just to appall people.
Yeah. And so to me, that's not even... It's not even art.
Not at all. It's he actually goes on here to call it, he uses another French term, this épater le bourgeois, just to shake up the middle class.
Yeah, just to dazzle them. Okay, right. Let's dazzle the bourgeois. They're just boring people.
And offend them. Like, yeah. you've got to shake them up, you know, offend them.
So I mean, if any of you out there, if you can just get in your minds that this is really a horrific art display. It's nothing pleasant. There's nothing alluring about it. And of course, what Krauthammer, he's not afraid to tackle it right up front. And he said, hey, the culture gardens are going to scream censorship.
Yep.
You know, if you don't allow, and this is a public museum, publicly owned museum, the taxpayers are paying for it. And they're saying, what do you mean we can't put our slime.
Yeah, exactly.
In your museum. You know?
It's really not a question of censorship. No one's saying they can't create this preposterous excuse for art. But Giuliani was just saying we don't want taxpayers to fund its display.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it was funny when I first read it, I wondered, who is this mayor? You know what? Before I even got to the second pair, I said, I bet it's Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
Because he's got what? Conservative values.
He does, yeah.
And he still does, yeah.
Yeah, I had the chance to hear him speak in Oklahoma City a couple of years ago. He gave a seminar there, and a really interesting speaker. And, of course, he's come into the limelight quite a lot more
I know.
Under President Trump lately.
Yeah, because of the the culture guardians are screaming censorship. It's the same people.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you're the mayor of New York or whether you're the lawyer for Trump. If the left doesn't like you, well, you're just guilty of censorship, or you're a misogynist, or you're a racist. And so, but I'm just impressed with Krauthammer. I mean, the guy was a genius, and he could pick up a subject like this and then really teach a lesson.
What a writer. Yeah, he could distill it down to its essence and not just convey the meaning of what's really happening, but do it with just beautiful art in every sentence that he wrote. He's I really miss seeing his columns appear like they used to.
Yeah. That's why this book, I think, it's just so worth having. But the thing is, he goes on to say, it's an old story. Art, whose very purpose is, I'll just say that, to dazzle the bourgeois, is at the same time demanding the bourgeois subsidy. Of course, if the avant-garde had any self-respect, it would shock the bourgeois on its own dime. Now, that's really funny.
That's exactly right. He's saying, you know, we're not saying you can't create this
stuff.
Right. But just why require us to subsidize it?
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it is, there's some things in here that I don't think we can even read on the radio.
Yeah.
Some of the names, but the point is, I just feel what's so sad in our culture, and he brings this out, is, and I think you and I could really, really kind of talk about this some more, is, you know, did the mayor have, you know, is it decent rationale? I mean, is it censorship? Does the public who, you know, is putting their tax money into something, do they have to accept it just because there's this left elite say, hey, we got to show our art. It's our First Amendment rights. You know, do they have the right to put it in a public facility and have the public pay for it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would personally say not at all. If it's this sort of detritus, I think Krauthammer really, really states it compellingly here. He says, why are we being forced to subsidize willful, offensive banality for fear of being considered terminally unsophisticated? And that's a big part of what these type of artists and radicals try to do, is paint anyone who disagrees with them as Philistines, unsophisticated barbarians who simply can't appreciate the beauty of what they're trying to convey. And that's it's a shameful excuse for logic.
Yeah, I don't know if you had time this morning, but this morning I did listen to Mr. Stephen Fleury's Trumpet Daily, and he was talking about Rush Limbaugh and what a contribution he made to radio. He actually brought radio back to life. Hmm. And he went after the Republicans, the conservatives that were being so affected by liberal views and communist views. It's exactly the same thing. They were made to feel like they weren't unsophisticated if they didn't back up what the left was saying. And it was Rush Limbaugh that took them down all the time on the radio, saying, why do you care what they think?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the emperor's new clothes. Krauthammer actually mentions that in here. They say, look how wonderful his silky new robes are as they parade him out into the street.
But his underwear.
Exactly. and it takes someone like Rush Limbaugh, perhaps, to have the authenticity to say, that guy's naked. There's nothing there of value, even though they would like to paint you as, in that old fable, they said, only the stupid people can't see the emperor's clothes. So yeah. It's a great parallel to what's happening here.
Yeah, he calls it's cultural blackmail.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, and but isn't that what amazes me about this essay? Let me go back here and see to the back page and see when this was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it was before the beginning of the 21st century. And what's changed? Nothing. The blackmail's worse.
Yeah, the only thing that's changed is just, I think there's more of this banality, more of this kind of bullying from those that want to really tear down the established institutions.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about you, but, and I know, of course, I know your parents really well, but I came from a family, it was, you know, Irish, very Irish, My mother was very Irish, and my father was very Irish. And they weren't affected by people calling them unsophisticated. You know, they believed what they believed, and they could care less what other people thought.
Yeah, you know, I think it was probably the same for my family. After going to university, I myself might have become more sensitive to those kinds of accusations. But yeah, my mom and dad, I think, would not have been at all insulted to say that's a bit of pornographic rubbish. That's not art, and I don't care who calls me unsophisticated for saying so.
Yeah. Well, my parents didn't even want me to go to a public college. You know, they wanted me to go to St. Vincent's and become a priest. Mm. You know, and they said, oh, don't go to a public college. You're going to be exposed to all kinds of things.
Yeah.
but the thing is, it was still pretty conservative. Or I went to the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown. It was the sister campus. And there were still some pretty conservative instructors there. And I think the art teacher that I had, I mean, she was pretty much, she could have been retired, but she just kept working. And she really kept us focused on, you know, like the Dutch masters. You know, I even had this great class on Chinese art. Hmm. But then we did study some of the modern stuff like Picasso. But the thing is, even with Picasso's art, maybe this we can get into another little segment here, is you know, the role of art and the role of the artist. Even Picasso, as strange as some of it was, he still had technique and style.
For sure, yeah, and incredible talent. It's abstract and it's a little off-putting, right, if you're uninitiated into that, but
right,
unmistakable talent and technique for sure.
But some of the things they sell as art today would be something a kindergarten kid would, like, you know, paste macaroni to a piece of board and draw some crazy lines on it, and that's supposed to be art.
Right.
Now, that's pretty stupid, really.
It is, yeah. I've never been able to cultivate an appreciation for Jackson Pollock, for example. I just struggle to see any structure or anything besides random chaos, really.
Yeah. You know, I even went back, and just to get a little bit more background, I went back to, got online a little bit and went back to modernism. And, you know, back, I mean, you're talking 1500s, 1600s when modernism started. There was style and technique. I mean, there was one photo of a painting, but what the artist was trying to portray is breaking through, let's say, your thought breaking through to get a bigger view, and it was like the sky, and his head went through the sky to the other part of the universe. But if you looked at it, it was still beautiful. I mean, stars look like stars. There were trees, but they look like trees, you know. And the man that was sticking his head through the sky, so to speak, to the other side, he still looked like a man.
Yeah,
you know, and he was well dressed. And so, right. I think we've really lost. We have really lost in our world the meaning of art. What's the role of the artist? You know, I think we had to talk about that for a while. What is the role of the artist? I read a few other essays on what's the role of a poet?
Yeah.
All that stuff is trash now. So what do you think? What is the role of the artist?
You know, there's one kind of widely accepted definition of what art is supposed to be from Leo Tolstoy, the Russian novelist. Mm-hmm. He called it a human activity consisting in this: that one man, consciously, by means of certain external signs, hands on to others feelings he has lived through, and that others are infected by these feelings and also experience them. And I think there's a lot of value in that definition. You know, artists are stirred by an experience of emotion, and then they go on to use their talents with clay or paint or music. Or, you know, camera or words, you were talking about poetry, to kind of encapsulate that emotion in a right. creative work. And so the evidence of its successful encapsulation, if they did it correctly, is that it would rouse that same emotion in those who view or hear it. There is some trouble, I think, with that definition, because I think it's only of limited value if it's just emotion for emotion's sake. Mm-hmm. But there's another definition that I came across recently. This is by Gordon Graham, who wrote Philosophy of the Arts. And he makes a case that art is most accurately defined as a creative expression that helps others to understand experience.
Yes, right.
And I think he's really onto something there. Just, you know, he says it's most valuable when it serves as a source of understanding.
Right. All that's very good. But I think Krauthammer can reduce it to three words. That's where his genius is.
Yeah.
He said it's beauty and transcendence.
Yes.
Three words. That's what the art is there. And it is. I mean, if you look at like Monet,
right.
I mean, I know it's a different style, but if you look at it from the right distance, it's absolutely inspiring. And of course he kept going after the lily pads. I mean, just over and over again. And what is that? How does that make you feel? It makes me feel peaceful.
Yeah.
To see it, you know.
With those impressionistic paintings, I'm always so stunned to consider how they could have created it from up close when it's only designed to really come into view
from far away.
How could you have created that from, you know, to an arm's length from the canvas?
Yeah, if that's an artist's style and technique, that's gone. I mean, when you see, there's one in this kind of website I got on, there's modern art. They come to now, not modernism, but then now to art today. Someone put three pillars together, you know, three blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a little kid would have done it, and they call it art, and everybody's just wowing over this art. I guess it was the name they gave it.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, it's that's stupid. But if you look at, let's say, Picasso's Guernica, I'm sure you're familiar with that one. That was about Spain and, you know, the horror that happened there. It really does make you feel horrible. I mean, it makes you see that there was terror, there was problems. And, you know, you can get that transcendence from that because there was still style and there was still technique to it. And, you know, putting three blocks together and calling it something, to me, and I'm not going to go pay at a museum to see that.
Yeah, you know, I think you're exactly right. I think that actually there's a quote here from the essay. Krauthammer says the role of the artist has changed radically in the last century and a half.
Right.
And that probably is when you can pinpoint it. Of course, at this point it's hard to see much of value in a modern art museum. But it probably really set in that long ago, a century and a half ago.
Right.
Is when
right.
When the shift started.
Right. So But I think the same thing has happened with writing literature and writing poetry. You know, I was actually trained to write poetry, and I know when I was in college, they would kind of get a little frustrated with me because they said you could really be published before you leave college. But to be honest, I didn't want to become like them. And I told them that. I said, well, I don't want to be like you. I mean, they were on drugs. They were going on these hallucinogenic things to write better. And I thought, well, how does that make you write better? I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah.
And so, but it really did start that way. But I think if you look at the role of the artist, the way people look at it today, they as Krauthammer says, they have become the emissaries of the aberrant.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's just make this as shocking and as gross as we can. That's my role. My role is to shock you. It is not to, well, inspire you, or it's not to give you peace of mind.
And it's not to convey truth. Sometimes the truth is shocking and people need to be shocked.
Right.
But in most cases, the role of the artist today is to shock just for the sake of shocking.
Right. But, you know, I was able to see the Mona Lisa.
Mm.
You know, and did you get to see it when you were in France?
I did, yes.
Yeah. I had wanted to see that, having been an art minor. You know, I'd wanted to see that for years. And I finally got to see it, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. I was not only impressed with how she looked, I mean, just How did he do that? How did Da Vinci do that? Because no matter where you look at her from, it looks like she's looking right at you. Now yeah. That is, how did he do that? Now that's skill.
It truly is. I think there's a reason why the Mona Lisa is the world's most famous painting.
Yeah.
She just captures this, she exudes this calm.
Yeah.
And like you said, you can sort of be anywhere in the room and her gaze follows you.
Yeah. It's really alluring, and it's just an experience. I mean, you actually experience something when you look at the Mona Lisa, and it's not that big.
No, it's a small painting. One of the more recent theories that's come out about why she's smiling is because she recently found out that she is pregnant.
Oh.
So I don't remember if that was mined from some of Da Vinci's notebooks or just a theory
could
based
be
on something
would,
else.
I'm working on a new article on feminism, and my wife and I had just completed Missed Motherhood, mm-hmm. one of the essays about yeah. the feminists who regret now they haven't had children and they can't have children now. And so that would really, if that were out there in front of the feminists, I bet that would really upset them.
Probably, you know. So.
Oh, you're misogynist. You just think like that.
Right. How dare this woman from 500 years ago be happy that she's
pregnant. Yeah. So anyway, I think all of you out there listening, you really need to read the whole essay. Like I said, there's some of it we can't even read on the radio. But the point is, I really think Mayor Giuliani at that point was right. He's saying, look, we're not going to use taxpayer dollars to display this slop. And of course he probably uses some other words than that, but you know, why do we get so crazy with this? And you know, let the elites and the intellectuals, you know, push us around. It just doesn't make any sense. And you know, we don't have to do that if we really look at it. And this is where I think Krauthammer says something there. We should be really thankful there's someone out there like a Giuliani that's willing to stand up and say something. You know, and of course, I think we should be thankful for Krauthammer that he was willing to stand up and say something. And again, it's just a three or four page essay, but he says so much, you know. And, you know, this whole society, of course, you and I know that here at the Philadelphia Church and at the college, we know there is a new society coming when Christ returns. We're going to have absolutely beautiful art again, and we're going to have art that inspires, and we're going to have buildings that are inspiring, and we're going to have, you know, a whole society that can lift people up. But I think the conclusion of the essay is really good. He says, ah, but every once in a while a burger arises and says to the artist, no need to report back from the edge. You can stay where you are. We'll have our afternoon tea without acid, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant.
It's really a great ending too. But there's a lot there's a lot in the essay, and I think it even talks about, hey, why do we have to put up with this revisionist stuff or this raw stinking shock? You know, I mean, he's not afraid to mince words, is he?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Really makes you miss Krauthammer.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. Very much so. And we really need to be thankful for him, and actually thankful they printed this book. Well, Jeremiah, this is the end. It's the time is up. We've got to quit. So thank you for coming on. I know you're a very busy man. Maybe sometime we can do another one, you know, if
yeah.
you get the time. So
I hope so, and I really appreciate you having me.
Yeah, so everyone out there, please read this essay, and that's all we have time for today's program. But next time, I will delve into another essay by Charles Krauthammer. Now, remember, we are moving closer to the end of our series entitled A Tribute to Charles Krauthammer. We are reading selected portions of his book of essays titled Things That Matter, and there's still a little bit more to come. I will be announcing our next selection, and I think it's going to be a series you're going to like. And but we'll probably It won't be starting for a while. So you can still buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. Now, please write me any comments you may have to JBL at PCUG.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. And you can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.